Hello and welcome to, is it okay to start?
It's okay.
Okay. Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. I'm Diana Isaacs, joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. We are still at ADA Scientific Sessions in sunny and very hot Orlando. We have another special guest. We have Davida Kruger. And who really probably needs no introduction, but do you mind introducing yourself to our audience just in case they don't know
who you are, what your background is, give us some.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm really honored to be here. So thank you, because I follow your podcast and I really like it. So thank you. And I like how you guys think about diabetes and management. But I'm Davida Kruger. I'm a certified nurse practitioner. I work at Henry Ford Health Systems in Detroit. I have been in the position in endocrinology now for 42 years. And I manage all of the clinical research, and I also do clinical practice. So, and I specialize really in technology. So you're not going to come see me if you don't really want to think about technology. You know, CGM, insulin pumps, and, you know, we have probably more than 2,000 people that we follow on insulin pumps. And we really believe that a patient decides the device, not us, which is complex, as you all know, in practice. Because that means every day you may be seeing 15 patients and there may be all the pumps on the market in through your cases as well as the CGMs, and you're constantly going back and forth to say, things are fun to me. What do they need?
What download am I using? How do I doing it?
Yep.
What's the algorithm?
Right, exactly. What can I tweak here? What makes them different?
Yeah.
All right. But it keeps you on your toes.
You know, it's really exciting. Yeah, really exciting that we have these many options to meet the needs.
And empower them to make that own their own decision as to what technology they choose to use on at that time.
Well, you know, I was telling patients too, it's I don't go home with you at night. That's a good thing for you and me. So that I really do want them to own their own diabetes. They can only do that by the choices they make of what fits into their lifestyle.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Right. That's a wonderful way to put it too. Right.
So ADA, what
here we are,
right in the highlight.
So hard for you.
So much here.
So I did arrive on Wednesday. Today's Sunday. I probably could crawl under this table and take a nap and get lost under there. There's so much going on. And I think that's the excitement of what we all do and why I don't retire. Because every time I think about that, I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to miss that. Or I don't want to miss that. So, you know, we've really started taking type 2 diabetes seriously.
Yes.
And that's really important. When I first started, we didn't have anything to offer people with type 2 diabetes. We didn't even have, we didn't offer them finger sticks because we didn't have them. We had sulfonylureas and we had insulin. And now when you think of GLP-1, you think of all the things that go along with GLP-1, and you think of SGLT2 inhibitors, and you think that we all agree, I believe, that CGM is for type 2 diabetes. And, you know, I think that, first of all, I've always thought that CGM is a right and a privilege, and that we're not offering it to enough people with type 2 diabetes, and you don't need to be on insulin. We don't need to be concerned just about hypoglycemia. And so now we're moving there. And if you saw the work of the SECURE, S-E-C-U-R-E, studies that we've been doing, type 2 diabetes and insulin pumps. And so I was one of the investigators on that study, and you know, and they came to us and said, can we, I'm like, yeah, we'll put all these people on insulin pumps. And the outcome was excellent. And so now we have to think about how do we move that to practice. And then we know that obesity exists, not just in type 2, but also in type 1. And also, if we don't think about obesity, we're going to have more people with diabetes. So that was out there. Cardiovascular stuff. There was a conference on, do we really believe there is adverse effects using GLP-1s? And I basically said, and all these things we're worried about, we shouldn't be.
Right. All that amazing. Yeah, we're talking about, what have we said about, what's your dot phrase for MTC, right? Like, so if you have this history and blah, 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 and it happened in rats, and here we are, and this whole thing that we've had to discuss.
Yes.
They finally said, so we haven't found a case yet. How many millions now have we done where this happens in rats, but it doesn't happen in humans? It's all of those little, oh, we have to stop it before surgery. No, we don't. Oh, we have to be careful of this. No, we don't. Oh, we, you know, yes, there are some GI side effects. And we need to teach them and be aware of them and titrate slowly, I think, is one of the things that we're all learning. Because the study said, go up every month, go up, go up, go up. But in reality, we don't really need to do that. And that's, I think, part of what we're learning here.
Right. You know, going back to the SECURE T2D study, I'm curious how the results, I know it wasn't compared to people with type 1, but what's kind of your general sense? Like, Did it work as well with type 2 as we see as the type?
So what was exciting for me is that, as I said, we have thousands of people literally on insulin pumps. So we don't distinguish between type 1 and type 2, but we do educate the patients ahead of time, what it is, what it isn't, you know, see the dietitian, see the educator, whatever it is. We just took all comers for this study. So literally, do you have a patient who has type 2 diabetes, wants to talk to me about research? Yeah, okay, let me tell you what the study is. And then he dumped them in the study, and they didn't even have to be on CGM.
Wow.
Do they have to be on mealtime insulin?
No.
Wow.
They had to be on basal.
Right. Okay.
But they didn't have to be on mealtime insulin. So imagine that dynamic, and then think about the outcome of CGM. So what I found very interesting is, yes, they need education. Yes, they need support. Everybody should see a dietitian because none of us know what's in our food that we're eating. But it didn't take that much to help them be successful and have a good outcome. And so why is that important? Because you and I cannot see all people with type 2 diabetes. So at some point, we have to trickle this down to the primary care providers. And so knowing that it was that, I'm not going to say easy because, you know, it's not easy, but that it was translatable to those patients and to a good outcome. And, you know, they're showing you the data on the median of the A1Cs that came in.
Right.
Well, the ones, we had plenty of people at A1Cs of 10%, that their A1Cs came down 2.1%.
Right.
Wow.
And it was a 2-month study.
That's incredible.
So, right. I'm just excited about how's that going to translate
right
for the population. And I think it's going to be, and I think we're going to start with, of course, the endocrinologist or the endocrine population or those people that really understand pumps anyway, and now say, okay, can you extend what you're going to include?
Right. Yeah.
I'm curious the bolusing behavior of the people in the study. Like, were they, like, how often were they?
Well, we asked them to do 2 to 3 times a day to help out the algorithm, but also, you know, that algorithm, yes, it does the best because it's bolus centric.
Right.
It does the best when the people take the bolus before the meal and do corrections.
Right.
And for the most part, we got people to do that, but if they don't, the algorithm will adapt.
Right.
It will adapt. So we saw good outcomes.
And especially those that aren't bolusing, or they don't need mealtime insulin, so the algorithm, you know, says, okay, what we see in MDI is that occasionally we see this spike, and you go, well, that was dinner out on Tuesday, and that was whatever. The algorithm can help with those so that you might still have a slight increase, but not this massive high that we see, you know, 2-3 times a month, where someone with type 2 who only uses basal wants to go to dinner with their girlfriends or their bowling league or whatever. And we're, well, you know, try to eat less carbs at those celebrations. Try to, you know, like, don't eat your potato. How about if you could just be a person and do it,
right? I also think that the a lot of our basal patients
need real time.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Probably with a 10%.
Right. I do it for those apple, right?
Yeah, absolutely, right?
And
I don't have the data at my fingertip, but we had a considerable population that was already on GLP-1s and SGLT2 inhibitors because the FDA required it.
Oh,
and we also did exercise studies and meal studies.
Wow.
So they got a meal for 3 days in a row that was the exact same carbs. So we got frozen foods with the exact same carbs so we could see what happened with those patients. We also, and what we did was we gave them one meal they bolused 50% and one meal they didn't bolus.
Excellent.
And wow, with all that data.
Wow. Well,
and then
right,
3 days of exercise too.
Right.
So
what was the exercise they chose to? Was it biking or walking, or what did they do?
More than you're doing. Just what we tell people with type 2 diabetes, do more than you're doing.
Right.
So they had, I think it was either 30 or 60 minutes that they had. I think it was 30 minutes of light and 60 minutes of heavy, something like that.
Okay.
But for some people who do nothing, that's a lot. That could have been walking around the block.
Right.
And I got some people that did housework.
Yep.
All right. For 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, that
could be a lot. Right. Yeah.
So that data's got to come.
Love that. Yeah. That's amazing. I can't wait.
Not more to come.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I'm curious your thoughts. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about closing the loop and trying to get rid of boluses completely. I mean, with Tandem, we've seen some interesting data presented just with people using that system, which is in an ideal state, people with bolus, but they don't bolus.
Well, they're not a bolus, right. Yep.
They titrate
that.
They're in a time and range. So kind of curious where you see the field going in terms of closing the loop.
Yeah, I think it'll come to. I'm hoping that Beta Bionics will do the next phase of their pump. I still enjoy their pump, but I think it's a specific patient.
Yeah,
but on that pump, when they close the loop, I think it's going to be exciting. And you know, I've identified exactly what you're saying, Diana. I look at the data and I say to the patient, you could take a bolus sometime.
Tuesday?
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, it says you never bolus.
Right.
I literally had a patient come in to me and say, something's completely wrong. I said, well, Susan, I'm looking at your data and you haven't bolus in a month. She was really. And she honestly had forgotten the job I'm bolusing. So, but many of my patients get great numbers or good numbers.
Right.
Not great, but good numbers. So wouldn't it be nice if they didn't have to think about that, if we could close the loop and just wear the ball?
Right.
And don't you think CGM is accurate enough at this point that we could close the loop and just say, you know, let the pump and the sensor talk and you go have a good life?
Well, I'm hoping with AI tools that will really be the next step.
Yep.
I know, like, we attended the D-Data symposium on Friday, and so one of the companies was looking at data and kind of going backwards and figuring out how many carbs a person ate based on their CGM data. And so if we could have AI tools to do that, then maybe it would know how much to bolus. And so it could be really interesting. But I think, like, yeah, reducing the person's burden.
Yes.
Of doing that would really be awesome. That'd be the next step.
Anything we can do to reduce the burden. I mean, we all know how many points of care
right.
a person with diabetes, whether it be type 1 or type 2, does every single day.
Every single day.
Yeah. And sometimes, I don't know, I'm seeing like a lot of companies and a lot of discussion about getting more data and analyzing more data. But sometimes I think that's like not necessarily what we need to do.
Yeah.
It's like at some point, it's not about just collecting all this data. It's about what can we do to simplify things and really help the person with diabetes. And I don't know, I think some of the human factors of it isn't always present in the data.
Of course it's not.
Right.
But it's asking the questions if the patient remembers the answer, assuming you see them every 3 months. But you look at the data and you say, okay, what time do you wake? What time do you go to bed? When do you have a snack? When do you exercise? You know, what kind of foods do you eat? What time is, you know, dinner? I mean, those questions to superimpose, but I agree with you. So I would say 5 years ago, I was one of these people that kept saying, the reason we're not getting people to adopt CGM is because they don't know what to do with the data.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what to do with the data. We need to spend the time in primary care and in some endo practices. Here's how you read the data. This is what an NGP is. And, you know, dig down in there and understand it. I think we've come to terms with the fact that you don't have to dig down in there to understand it.
Right.
AGP will give you so much of what you want. But I'm also taking a stance that there are people whose patients need to have a CGM. And if you're standing in the way because you're not comfortable with the data, get out of the way, give the patient the data. Because I see CGM is synonymous with self-care and behavioral modification. And so if I give it to a patient and they look at the data and they make changes, they're going to still have a better outcome. I mean, just look at Tom Brace's work with the study he did
in Findlay, Ohio.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Right.
All he did was give sensors and 2% to 3% A1Cs go down. So while I'd like every healthcare provider to understand AGP and look at the data, if you honestly can't, get out of the way of the patient, give it a sensor.
Right.
Let the patient own.
Right.
And we know that there is data that even beyond Tom Brace's, which was such a significant drop.
Yes.
There is other data that says, you know, you put that on them and you never do anything with it. And
right.
Person does.
Yeah.
And it's somewhere between 0.7 and 1.0.
Right.
So we're already looking at those people are changing behavior because we're not changing their medication.
Correct.
Right. So we know a little bit more about that aspect of it.
Right.
I will say, coming when you come to endocrinology, I always, you know, people come in with CGM and I always print a color report for that download. And I look at this, I want to talk to you about this. Have you ever seen this before? And I tell you almost no one has ever seen it, but they're on it. And so to me, that appointment is so much more valuable than me saying, let me get a sensor on you.
Right.
Come back in 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever it's going to be. I'm going to send one to your pharmacy. And then we can start our journey because you didn't bring your meter or your download. You're checking once every other day. You tell me it's not there when we. And so to me, even if the primary care just gives it to them, And they start without any guidance. When they get to us, we're that far ahead already. And that to me is everything, because then I'm a visit, if not two, because they say, yep, well, every time I eat pasta, I have a problem. But they already identified, if I go for a long walk, I bring a snack now because I get dizzy. They're seeing those patterns and talking to them.
Absolutely.
The first visit we have, which I love, right?
Oh, and I just wanted to clarify. Everyone knows I'm super pro CGM, insulin pumps, all that.
Yeah.
But in the data that comes from them, I think one of the things I'm seeing is there's some apps that are asking the person with diabetes to put
in more information.
Well, that's right.
They don't do it.
That, yes.
Right.
Right.
They don't do it.
My being, right, when they took their insulin, right, they're not on a connected pet. And so that's what I'm kind of against, because I don't want to place this additional burden on a person.
Right.
And then it'll show up in the reports for the clinician, which is like, great. But you could also just ask the human being
that's
with your verbal.
Oh, yeah.
Right. What happened, instead of trying to ask them to do all these different things.
But I also think when you do ask them, they might do it for a day or two or even a week, but then they stop anyway, because and that tells us it's a burden, right?
Exactly.
It tells us that when people can't do it all, then you're asking too much.
Well, I think too, and if you burden the healthcare provider when on fewer and fewer ones, I realize it's about the patient, but if we're trying to get more and more healthcare providers to pick up CGM and order CGM and prescribe,
they can't ask what to do.
And they're not going to look at the data if we burden them. And I don't want that extra data either.
No.
I think I have enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's geeks that want to go through everything by line. But you know what? Sometimes two in the visits end up being 2 hours because they're going, that's not working either.
No.
Right.
So I think we have the right amount of data. And we have to decide who needs to see it and what to do with it.
Right. Like, I still think the AGP report is a great place to start.
Simple,
one caterer, and then you can ask additional questions.
Absolutely.
As needed.
So I have a question about, back to ADA, since we're here. What have you seen new technology-wise that you want to kind of call out and say you're excited about? Because there's a lot. There's a lot in the exhibit hall. There's a lot. There's a lot in the abstracts. There's a lot in the analysis. Give us your top, I don't know, two or three that you said that gave you a wow.
Well, I like Twist. I like Embecta, and I'm trying to think of what else I saw. Those two. Maybe over the counter.
Talk about that.
Oh, right, over the counter. So you know that's been revealed in the last week or two and rolled out now. So for the,
we're talking about CGM just for
not Tylenol, not right. It's anyway CGM over the counter, right? By two separate companies.
Yes. Both Abbott and Dexcom had rolled out over-the-counter for those individuals not on insulin. They're for diabetes, but not on insulin. Why do we need that? Because it depends on the insurance company whether they'll pay for it. So it's going to be at a lower price point. We're not sure what that looks like. The range will be $70 to $250.
And is that per month or per sensor?
No. I mean,
glucose rates.
The glucose, $50, but we believe the price will be lower, hopefully.
Yes.
And it's a 15-day sensor. So think about that. If the patient can afford one and they do it once a month.
Right.
Better than great. Right. The 2 weeks before they come and see you and I, before they come to their visit, but they can't afford it all the time.
Right.
Yeah, they have a high deductible plan.
Right. Whatever it is.
Yep.
And so, people have FSAs and all kinds of stuff that they might be able to do. So I think that's the group of people. Why is that important? Behavioral changes.
Yes.
And the other is, people say, they don't need it because they're not going to be low. That's not the only thing we're using CGM for today. We're using it for behavioral change. We're looking at people to all in their own diabetes. And you'll see a huge change. Even there's enough research to say that individual just on GLP-1, you add a sensor and you get a lower A1C.
Absolutely.
So, I think that's really pretty exciting for the patient's options. Not that I really want to get into it, because I think it's a bag of worms or whatever that word is. There will be one that is for non-diabetes.
Yeah.
You don't know enough about that, the lingo. I have a few nightmares over that, because people are going to wear it and they're not going to know what to do with the data. And they're going to diagnose themselves, and then we're going to have people that we shouldn't be seeing. But I think there are behavioral changes for exercise and other activities and weight reduction that I think lingo will be helpful.
For pre-diabetes, for the people that are starting to have postprandial spiking, but not, their fastings are still, their A1C hasn't changed. So I could see it there, because it's, the over-the-counters are for diabetes. They're not for pre-diabetes.
Right.
I am curious as to And that really person should be going to primary care if they're worried about what they're seeing, right?
Right.
But we are going to get called into some of those, but we're going to have to see how that goes, because it might be a great time for we as providers to educate and say, that person isn't coming to my office. If you're concerned, let's start them on the ADA guidelines now. We start with, are they at cardiovascular risk? Should they, they can't get a GLP-1 without a diabetes diagnosis unless you want to use it for weight loss. Is that how we're going to treat this? Are we going to give them metformin, which you can use pre-diabetes because it's inexpensive, right? So we'll be able to have those conversations and pick medications.
I think with GLP-1s and the CGM, we are going to see the rates of diabetes finally decline. I am really hopeful about that, because we're going to be treating people with overweight and obesity.
Yes.
They're going to learn lifestyle behaviors from CGM. Even if we could stop it from increasing, that would be a huge
amazing.
Hope.
Yeah, and then they won't just have an A1C and say, oh, the A1C is 5.7, I'm going to refer them. They have data, and we can teach them how to
get data. Right, they're spiking to 220 after meals, and they never knew it, and neither did we. And now we, even though the A1C, I could have some spiking like that, especially after high-carb meals, with still not having an A1C at diagnosis, at 6.5%. So we are going to catch things earlier. And those are the exact people that need a GLP-1 early,
right?
So,
or send them to a dietitian.
Yeah, I do. All of it together, right?
That
whole circle. I mean, every reason to send.
Yes,
right.
I think that's exciting, and I hope your predictions are.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So one more question. You're a podcast.
So talk to us.
It's like, right,
big bill.
I know.
I was like, what are we going to ask?
Your podcast. Talk to us about what you and your colleagues are doing. And so
they are. Ethan Miller from Oregon, and Jen Goldman from Boston, and myself. And it's Sweet Talk for this with CGM with the Sugar Greens.
I love it.
And it's great. We have a 12-month projection of the outlines that we're using. So every month on the last Monday, there was a holiday last month, so we moved it. But the fourth Monday of every month, we do a live podcast for 30 minutes. And it's CME. So you get CME credits. You can go to YouTube. You can go to Facebook. You can go to LinkedIn and pick it up. And then they're archived. So if you miss one, you can go back and start. Tomorrow's going to be our third. And we just have such a good time with it. But we're doing case studies, and we're talking about products, and we're talking about how to interpret, how to reimburse, and, just little things, barriers. So there's just everything that you need to know about using CGM.
And I want to hear a little bit about some of the swag that you...
Let's talk about it. Well, great.
First swag we got is our stickers, but we're very jealous.
Yeah.
Our podcast doesn't have them.
So there you go. And then we have these little jackets with our logo on it, and hoodies and little bags. And I'm really excited about, and we're very fortunate. It is Medscape, but there was an educational grant from Abbott, a call out to them for... care enough about all of us
at our daily,
right,
to put the make the investment.
That is so awesome.
That makes me very happy, and we can't wait to be part of it. We want to both be guests, right?
But we're gonna be tab. We're gonna tune in.
We're gonna tune in. Sorry, tune in.
Yes, please tune in. Well, thank you so much, Divya.
Yes,
awesome to have you on here, and thank you all for tuning into this episode. And we will see you next time. Thanks.